The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning and happy Conspiracy Theory Thursday. It is September 26th of 2024. And I guess we're going to be back to some warm weather for the next couple of days. I'm looking forward to fall whenever fall comes. In fact, I don't know. I think I'm kind of ready for winter. Even at this point, and let's just kind of get into it and start talking Christmas, holly, have a holly jolly. No, I don't want to get into holly jolly Christmas yet, but of course, I don't know. I was already seeing. I forget which store I saw. Was it Costco that still had some Christmas displays up already? I'm not quite ready for that. I'm really not. But anyway, 11 minutes after 6, join in at 770-5633. And we have some open phone time here before. We're going to be talking with Steve Malloy a bit about the Kamala Harris interview. I swear I was going to watch that, and I thought it was at 5 o'clock yesterday on MSNBC because I didn't even know where MSNBC was on the channel selector, but I had to go find that. And then I found out that she actually did it at 4 o'clock with Stephanie Ruhle. And we'll have to talk with Steve Malloy about that. I don't think they talked much about energy. Steve had some energy questions that could have been asked about that because, you know, if you're really talking about trying to reduce prices in the United States of America, you have to reduce the input cost. And the input costs, some of the biggest input costs are the cost of energy. And energy prices have, of course, been soaring the last few years. And this has been purposeful, in my opinion, and many other opinions here, based on the Biden administration. The whole idea will transition you to free solar and wind, that you have to build another power plant to back it up when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. But, yeah, we'll talk with him about that at 6:30. Rick Manning is having the D.C. Swamp Update today for a change instead of tomorrow at 6:30 when we normally have him on. So there's some scheduling conflicts. So we're going to bring him on today and probably talk more about Harris. Something I do want to I've noticed that there are pundits on the right that are starting to come out, and maybe the right or the libertarian type thing. They're concerned that President Trump is just going tariff crazy and threatening companies with tariffs, if you end up moving your manufacturing outside. I don't know if going to war with corporate America or with the manufacturing of America is a great idea. Maybe there's a way to thread that needle. I don't know. I'm sure Rick will have some good commentary on that, too. We talked to some great people here on 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Join in, 770-5633. Speaking of the, gosh, I had a story this morning. Did I just set this up? Gosh, I lost my. Here it is. Okay, I put it. Over here. Put it behind me here. You know the BOEM, the offshore auction. Oregonian is reporting that this could be in jeopardy. Most developers who are eligible to bid on Oregon's first ever auction to build the floating windmill farm off the coast, off the southern coast of Oregon, they've pulled out. There's only one contractor that's left. The Oregon-based New Sun Energy is still interested in taking part in that October 15th lease sale, and they're not so sure that they're going to move forward if they end up going with just one bidder. You know, it's not really an auction. How do you do this if there's only one bidder? When I said BOEM, it's the U.S. Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which is doing the bidding. It can't comment on the auction. But John Romero, who is a spokesperson, said can't really talk about this lease at this time. So they had talked about the five companies that qualified to bid for a couple of offshore wind energy areas, 195,000 acres of the ocean, one near Coos Bay and the other near Brookings. Now, this was something that David Brock Smith was all over. Senator Brock Smith was all over this one. And, of course, a lot of people were criticizing for him, kind of like against the wind power before he was for the wind power. And I don't know. I'm kind of curious what Senator Brock Smith is thinking about this one, because it may be going down in flames. That could be something to watch. There's also another interesting story. There's a trial going on in Medford. I didn't even heard about this one till Nick Morgan wrote about this in the Rogue Valley Times. It has to do with the Cerakote company, NIC, over in White City, suing Rust-Oleum. The people behind Rust-Oleum, because apparently they had this this product that they were manufacturing and marketing together, which would clear up the if you have those the plastic car headlight lenses, and they had this this Cerakote type of material that you could put to clear up. You know what it's like when they get all cloudy and stuff, and everybody goes goes nuts on that. And essentially what NIC is claiming is that they claim that Rust-Oleum, after they ended up pulling out of their deal with one another, that Rust-Oleum reverse-engineered the Cerakote product, and so they're suing over that. So that's really interesting. I'd be curious to see how that ends up working. So they were partnering at first, and then they broke apart. And the way I understand it, the Cerakote folks in White City are claiming that Rust-Oleum just stole their project, figured out what they did or reverse engineered the chemical and then did it on their own. So we'll see how that works out, huh? 16 minutes after 6, we'll talk about some other headlines too. And if you want to join in, hey, good to talk with you at 770-5633 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
OregonTriumedford.com.
Hi, I'm Stephen with Stephen Westfall Roofing Inc., and I'm on KMED.
19 minutes after 6 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And, gosh, if you have a great Conspiracy Theory Thursday call, I'm happy to talk with you, including Deplorable Patrick. Hello, DP. What's on your mind today, huh?
Hey, good morning, Bob. Bill, I've got to – I was just talking to this other guy, Bob. Good morning, Bill. I was I got to talk fast because I'm on my way to work, but I'm always watching these election prediction things on YouTube, and they say, well, New Jersey is not as Democratic as it was because it's been weakened by the fact that Bob Menendez has been convicted on several counts of bribery. And I'm hearing about this. I've heard about it over and over, but I don't hear anything about sentencing. Do you?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, sentencing has been delayed until after the election, and he was found guilty. He's not going to be sentenced until 2025. I just took a look up when you were asking about this. And the judge of the Southern District of New York postponed the sentencing and his two co-defendants until January 29th. So it's going to be after the new Congress is seated that he will be sentenced.
That's better, because I was thinking it's one of those things that they just want to have kind of go away, which I'm not interested in that at all.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. As far as whether New Jersey is going to turn a Democrat, I think the way Bob Menendez works is actually a job qualification. This is New Jersey we're talking about, okay?
Well, I just have to know about these things, because I always wonder, if I decide to rob a bank and I get caught, do I get off the hook by just quitting my job?
Yeah, really? I resign, right? That kind of thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm going to quit my truck driving job so that they make everything go away. I don't,
Yes,
you hear this?
That does not appear to be the case. All right?
Appreciate the update then, Bill. Thanks so much.
All right. Yeah, you bet. It was kind of off the news cycle, but yeah, that is the latest. Menendez, January 29th. Out of office and maybe in prison. Gosh, we really don't know. We go to line two on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Yeah, good morning, Bill. This is Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, this is sir in your wheelhouse. What do you think about George Soros either buying or trying to buy, the media company with the 200, radio stations in it?
Well, he's buying Odyssey, a good interest in Odyssey. Can I say I'm real pleased about that? No, I'm not real pleased about it. I think the part that I'm most concerned about it is first off, left-wing radio has had great difficulty making a go of it because it just hasn't been particularly able to grab an audience for the most part.
Right. They can't find anybody wants to listen to, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it's been for quite some time. I remember back in the days of Air America and all that. And gosh, I'm trying to think. There was a guy that I worked with in Fargo that kind of went to the left after having been a right-wing guy. Remember Ed Schultz? Remember Ed Schultz back in the day, a number of years ago? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And back when Rush Limbaugh was still alive, you had a bunch of people who were kind of conservatives, but then they kind of flipped on the other side because I think it's because cynically they figured out there was no money to be made going after Rush, that kind of thing, because he just beat the pants off of them every time. But, you know, he ended up flipping to the left, too. And I just couldn't believe it because I worked with him in Fargo for a short time. And he was about to the right of Attila the Hun. And then all of a sudden, he's talking all this left-wing stuff. I guess it's all a matter of what of where you can make the money, I guess. So I'm a little cynical about this. But as far as Odyssey, back to Soros, boy, I can't say
well,
it's...
Can they just change? They can change formats, obviously. And then, yeah. You know, they have some conservative talk show guys on their program.
Sure they do.
So they can switch for, format, but also... You can't just shut a radio station down, correct? If you do that, then somebody else will take. FCC makes somebody else take it over.
Well, yes and no. There is the possibility, and they can't just. Well, they could change the format. I don't think George Soros is going to purchase them just to shut them down. One way or the other, George is always out there to make money, and I'm not. Terry, I think we lost Terry. Okay, well, I'll just keep explaining what I thought, you know, about this. My concern is that they seem to have fast-tracked, the Biden administration has fast-tracked the approval of George Soros being able to take these stations over. And it does seem to be odd timing. I don't know if this is something you do right before the election. They normally take quite a bit of time to examine and see how they're going to go about this. It does feel like a political game, you know, at this point in time. And yeah, it you know, he could cause some problems. It could be one of those things. And I got to tell you, if you're a conservative talk show host and you're working for George Soros's Odyssey, you know, and you know that you're working for Odyssey, is it one of those things where you don't necessarily go liberal? You don't take your show to a more liberal situation. People would detect that, but maybe you're way more careful and then you self-censor. You start to self-censor just out of self-preservation. And there's that that chilling effect possibly that could be happening with George Soros. I'm just, you know, tossing out the way, you know, that it goes, because everybody has a boss. Everybody has a boss. You know, I have a boss, and there are certain places that, you know, that I know you don't cross certain lines. It's just the way it is. You know, unless you own your own station and you, then I guess you're, you know, you are just fine. But everybody has limits. Everybody has bosses. It's a matter of, boy, when you're talking about being a political talk show host down there, how George Soros could be a chilling influence on those radio stations. But of course, they end up being his radio stations. I'm just surprised that the FCC approved it so quickly. But the FCC has been going woke, and it is a partisan game. You had three Democrats and two Republicans on the advisory committee that made that decision. It was a 3-2 vote. That's the way that goes. In other words, federal elections, when it comes to federal broadcast licenses, have federal consequences. All right? All right. So this could be a parting shot, a giveaway to George Soros and the left, perhaps even under, you know, under a President Trump administration. They see that President Trump's going to be there. Maybe they want to have a little bit of pushback against him. I'm just saying the possibility could be there. All right? All right. It's 26 after 6. Back to the phones here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hello. Hi.
Hi, Bill. It's Vicki from the Applegate.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
Good. I'm just sitting here waiting for, well, it's really cloudy out right now, but sitting out here in the almost dark.
Yeah.
I just had a comment about the windmills on the coastline.
Mm-hmm.
Brookings has turned into such a huge tourist attraction now, and I go to my husband and I go to Charleston. We love Charleston, and I'm just concerned if they put these windmills off the coastline. I know that the charters go from 15 miles up to 45 miles out when they're taking people out to go fishing. So if they decide to do this, how is that going to affect the fishing industry as far as, like, for people to go out on boats and fish? Do they have to go around it? Are they going to be allowed to, you know what I mean? How far out are these windmills supposed to be?
Well, I was under the impression, let me see if I'm looking here at this story that the Oregonian had on this. I recall, and this is something I'd have to look up and get more involved in, and maybe I can talk to somebody about this because I can't say I'm an expert on this. I don't want to give you a snow job on this particular situation. One of the times, some of the distances that I heard talked about were about 19 miles off the coast, 15 to 19 miles off the coast, which would seem that it would certainly impact or could impact the charter, you know, the charters and where people go.
Right.
I think where more people are concerned about, it's not necessarily the floating windmills that they're concerned about, but it's the infrasound going into the ocean and the various unseen environmental impacts of something like this, besides the fact that, you know, you're going to be laying, you know, some big electrical cables underground that are quite hot from the way people have described it. And there's just, it's just, I think there are better ways to generate power than to start screwing. In fact, I would rather they go with the tidal wave kind of power, in which they're using the floats to use the ocean currents to do it. That makes way more sense to me than going to wind power, you know?
I was thinking, too, and I know that I heard a story on, I don't have television, but I heard a story on the radio about whales, a bunch of whales beaching themselves.
Yeah, that was on the East Coast where they've been doing sounding and doing surveys of the seafloor bed, and they think that the sonar that they were using just screwed the whales up. And so I guess we just need our own dead whales showing up here. It's dead whale equity, Vicki, which is what they're trying to do out on the West Coast here, you know, for the
area. And I don't believe, and I'm not just concerned about the business part of. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be affected. I'm also concerned about debris in the ocean. Like you said, they're burying cables. What is, you know, the salt water is pretty harsh on stuff.
Ultimately, I think the takeaway on the floating wind power situation, it's out in bad weather. It's inaccessible.
Right.
They're all the windmills, when you look at them, they're mechanical devices, ultimately fragile. And it just looks to me to be a bad idea overall, and especially, you know, very expensive. Yeah, the wind blows all the time, and it's, you know, they're out there trying to fix a problem that's really not in existence. There are other ways that I think would be less impactful on the ocean to do it.
Wave. Mm-hmm. I mean, the waves can get quite big, especially that far out to sea. I think that is way better idea.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I'm more into the wave power people, but that's just me. Better yet, I would just say, hey, develop every type of energy that you can. But, you know, at least if you're going to have a wind power farm, you know, on land and there's a problem, you can get to it. All right.
Exactly.
You know, that's ultimately
that.
All right. Thanks, Vicki. I think we'll talk to Steve Malloy about that here in just a little bit. He's the founder of JunkScience.com. We're going to talk with him in a few minutes and catch up on that and energy. And I don't know if he's even heard about this potential of this wind power plant going down in flames out on the ocean with no flames. But I guess you can see the turbine oil is starting to spread on the ocean surface.
Ready to sip your way into fall bliss? Come indulge at Artisan Bakery Cafe. Their spice pumpkin latte with the perfect blend of spices will warm your soul with every sip. Try their maple bourbon latte, a warm, cozy treat with a kick. And don't miss their caramel apple chai latte, warm and delicious caramel apple wrapped in chai spices. Artisan Bakery Cafe's fall drinks are
to learn how. This message brought to you by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
News Talk 106.3 KMET. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Steve Malloy rejoins the show here, and he is a former Trump EPA transition team member. Gosh, also senior energy and environment legal institute fellow, also the founder of junkscience.com. And if anybody knows junky science, boy, you see it the moment it jumps out at you, don't you, Steve? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been doing this for more than 30 years.
So yeah,
it's pretty obvious.
sometimes, do you ever feel like a prize fighter going up against kindergartners when it comes
to it? It's like Groundhog Day. It's the same stuff every day. And yeah. It's just, you know, most people, they say they care about the environment. Of course, they don't really take any time to learn anything about it. So it's usually pretty easy to deal with.
All right. Well, last time I was talking to you a few days ago, we had mentioned that the state of Oregon has been trying to, or I should say the federal government, really, off the state of Oregon, has been trying to get some wind power out there, big floating power plants, 15, 19 more miles out there. And they were going to have this offshore auction October 15th, and it looks like all the other companies have pulled out except for one. There is one from Oregon, but they're not sure if they're going to be able to continue on with this because there's no competitive bid or whatever it is. But,
yeah.
You know, you were talking about some of the atrocious problems on the East Coast, right? And maybe you could remind people of that. And I'm wondering if this is – if like the – if the bloom is off this gangrene wind power rose out here, everywhere
well,
right now.
I guess the bottom line is that, you know, all this offshore wind stuff is all comes from the Inflation Reduction Act subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as generous as those subsidies are, and, you know, it's a portion of $369 billion, as generous as those subsidies are, they're not enough to overcome inflation and supply chain problems. And so they're just really not financially viable. You know, in addition to that, the offshore wind industry on the East Coast has got all this bad press, and rightly so, because since it started working, you know, probably close to 100 dead whales have washed up on beaches. And, you know, although the government denies that you know, these dead whales have anything to do with the offshore wind permits. If you look at the wind permits themselves, the federal government specifically authorizes the wind companies to kill whales, dolphins, porpoises, seals, what have you. As a matter of fact, you know, the big issue on the East Coast with the whales is the North Atlantic right whale. There's only supposed to be 300 of them living, but the Biden administration has written permits for the offshore wind industry. They can kill twice as many North Atlantic right whales are thought to exist. Okay.
So, we're going to kill the existing whales and any of their kids who survive. All right.
People hate the industry. And then, you know, when you get up to like Maine, where they have the lobster industry and what's left of the U.S. East Coast fishermen, you know, the wind industry would put an end to that too. So it's, you know, they're not doable. It's not affordable. It's not private companies. It's destructive for the environment and it's killing jobs. And, you know, I don't think it's going to work out any better on the West Coast.
Is there a good case to be made? I don't know how deeply you have looked into this, Steve, but is there a case to be made that there are more problems with the windmill and the infrasound? When I'm talking about infrasound, I'm speaking of the very, very low frequency thumps and whirs and impacts that that wind would end up making in the undersea environment, you know, just because of the sound being transmitted from all of this activity?
Well, we don't know. I mean, there's that. There's also the fact that, you know, these cables that take the power to shore, these cables they run at 140 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty hot. It's like taking a hot shower. And so there's really not going to be too much marine life in the vicinity of these cables. So, you know, there are all these environmental effects that have not been studied because nobody cares. We need to rush to, you know, save the planet with offshore wind.
We need to suck up the government grift, more importantly, let the grift go
That's
by.
That's what I meant to say.
I know Rahm Emanuel says never let a crisis go to waste. I think another one for today would be just never let a grift go ungrifted or ungrabbed. That kind of thing. Well, that's really interesting. Now, yesterday, Kamala ended up talking with Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC. And I was telling folks in the beginning, I thought I was going to watch it at 5 o'clock, and then it ends up being at 4 o'clock, so I missed it. You know, I should have just been camped out next to MSNBC, but I wasn't. Did you happen to catch the interview at all?
No, you know, I missed it too, but I understand that, I've seen clips where she has just done miracles with the word holistic.
Oh, I don't know if I have that. I do have a little bit. It is about tariffs, and we'll be talking about this off and on. You know, here's one clip just for fun, just so you can hear how serious she is, okay?
Tariffs aren't unique to President Trump. President Biden has tariffs in place. He's actually looking to potentially implement more. Where do you come out on it? Is there a good tariff, a bad tariff?
Well, part of it is you don't just throw around the idea of just tariffs across the board, and that's part of the problem with Donald Trump. Frankly, I say this in all sincerity, he's just not very serious about how he thinks about some of these issues. And one must be serious and have a plan.
Okay, so just know that she's serious, and she repeats serious just to make sure that you understand, Steve, how serious she is. So it's okay.
Yeah, she kills me. I mean, she has not spent a day of her adult life working in the private sector. For her to talk, yesterday she said she was a capitalist and she has an economic plan. She knows nothing about business. How can she know anything about the economy? It's ridiculous. You know, that interviewer, the MSNBC interview, she carried her the whole way. And you can listen to any answer. I mean, I've seen a number of clips from yesterday. Unfortunately, I don't think they talked about climate and energy because that would have been entertaining. But, everything that comes out of her mouth is just total vapidity. You know, that she's got nothing between her ears, and it shows. Her candidate is strictly based on sex and racial identity and the fact she's a Democrat, and that is it.
That may be all that matters, though. We don't know how this is going to play out, but that's kind of the world where we find ourselves.
Shame on us. I mean, I guess we deserve this if we get it.
I hope that we are not deserving. I hope that we are not worthy of a Kamala Harris presidency. Maybe we'll put it that way. We are not worthy. I'll use the old SNL thing. We are not worthy of Kamala Harris. But in all seriousness, though, if you had been Stephanie Ruhle, and you actually were going to conduct a serious interview on some of what, and let's talk about the energy policy, what would you have asked Kamala Harris? I'd love to get your take on this, Steve, please.
Funny you should ask that. I have a couple ideas. So, the Inflation Reduction Act has got $369 billion to save the planet. Half of the money that's been spent so far has gone to five battleground states like Arizona, Michigan, North Carolina, Georgia, and Nevada.
Uh-huh.
I think. So just half the money has gone to five states. The other half has gone to 34 states. I would ask her, is taxpayer money being used to buy votes for the election?
It's kind of self-evident, though, isn't it, when it goes to a particular place?
Yes, of course, the question answers itself, but I'd still be interested to hear what she has to say.
Yeah, government money needs to go and reward your friends and punish your enemies, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Another question to ask is, last Friday, the House voted to repeal the Biden-Harris EV mandate.
Right.
Okay. And, she has recently said that she also opposes the EV mandate. So my question would be, so are you going to shepherd the House bill through the Senate and get Joe Biden to sign it? Because that's what, this is a good chance to end the EV mandate.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
probably not going to happen either.
Yeah, I think that one would have been received kind of like the piece of excrement in the punch bowl, so to speak, floating in there.
Right.
But you see, it would have been great to be able to nail her down on something like this because, you say you're not into the EV mandate. Well, then let's prove it. Let's get rid of it. But, I think we really are at this point where you have to take her at her word when she says her values haven't changed. All that's changing is what she's telling people because you have to get elected. That's the job right now.
Yeah.
You have to hide.
Yeah, I mean, they would hold Donald Trump's feet to the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why not her? And then finally, I would have asked her about her support for fracking.
Now, she was actually being interviewed in Pittsburgh, so this was a big deal to talk about fracking, okay?
Yeah, but I don't think they made it into this MSNBC interview. So she says that in the debate with Trump, she said that she supported fracking.
Mm-hmm.
But, her supporters, like League of Conservation Voters, they said that, they basically know she's going to ban fracking. So which is it?
So the League of Conservation Voters. Okay.
Go ahead.
So I just want to be clear. League of Conservation Owners, voters, rather, say that it's inevitable she does this.
Right.
So that's what they think. They're some of her biggest supporters, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, no, and all the environmental groups, they know what she's going to do, okay? But she's out there just lying to people about, I support fracking. And fracking is not just some, goofy technology that produces a little bit of our oil. 90% of U.S. oil and gas production depends on fracking. 90%. So when you're against fracking, you know, you're against 90% of U.S. oil and gas production. And it's like, and it's not that she has the authority to ban fracking. She doesn't. But she has the authority to kill it through, you know, 1,000 different rules and regulations.
Where you just raise the cost and the it just becomes unprofitable to do it. Is that kind of where you're getting at, that sort of way of working
it? Yeah, you know, just like reality has made offshore wind really impractical, you can also make fracking impractical. And, you know, it's not a de jure ban, but it's a de facto ban.
By the way, isn't fracking used just in water drilling applications too, just to get water out of the land? Don't they do that that way?
I don't understand what you're asking me.
Oh, no, I was just saying that, you know, if fracking is supposedly this dangerous or this horrible technology. I've been led to believe that fracking has been used not just in oil wells, but also in water wells in order to fracture the rock in order to get the water or whatever.
So fracking is just fracturing the rock. Then you inject chemicals that loosen everything up and extract what you want. Then, of course, you have to deal with the wastewater. That's why environmentalists don't like it. Well, of course, they don't like it because it makes oil and gas really affordable.
Yeah. Well, anything that makes conventional energy affordable is just an evil thing right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, I like your questions. Could you have gone to work for MSNBC for a day or two just to make this happen? I would have loved to have had you there asking.
I would have volunteered.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you would have done it for free, right?
I would have volunteered, right.
All right. Hey, writing anything more about it, where can people find out more about everything Steve Malloy? Because you really do provide a lot of common sense ammunition on these issues here, Steve.
Okay, so I hit everything every day on X. At Junk Science, and then there's my website, junkscience.com.
Steve Malloy, senior fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. You can find out more about that, too, at eelegal.org. I'm going to ask NBC to hire you for the next one. That ought to be great.
Okay.
Can't
thanks,
wait,
Bill.
All right? Thanks, Steve. It's 647 KMED 99.3 KBXG is where you are. Hi, this is Bill Meyer.
Based on a survey of pharmacists who recommend branded vitamins and supplements.
Welcome to the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
10 before 7. Another bite from Kamala Harris. This is one about who is trusted on the economy. This was Stephanie Ruhle last night on MSNBC. I missed the interview, but I was able to grab a few clips on this one.
Polling shows that most likely voters still think Donald Trump is better to handle the economy. Why do you think that is?
Well, here's what I know in terms of the facts. Donald Trump left us with the worst economy since the Great Depression when you look at, for example, the employment numbers.
It was during COVID, and employment was so high because we shut down the government, we shut down the country.
Even before the pandemic, he lost manufacturing jobs by most people's estimates, at least 200,000. He lost manufacturing plants, ask the auto workers.
I seem to recall, now, I don't have every statistic at the top of my brain every time, but I seem to recall that overall there was a manufacturing bump of about 300,000 to 400,000 jobs by the end of the Trump administration. That's what I recall. I think I'm going to have to ask Rick Manning about that and just mention to see if he can get that stat handy up there. But I thought it was like 300,000 to 400,000. So I don't know if she's just making this up or... Of course, you also know how statistics can be played sometimes. You can find all sorts of ways to take the same number and make it say two completely different things. I don't know, but I think there's a reason why the polling tends to support President Trump, because most people do remember it as a somewhat better time. It's a little bit chaotic politically, though. There was chaos there because of all the the deep state attacks going on there. But I don't think she's right about that. I'll have to look that up and see if that's true or not. But Rick Manning and I will talk about that 10 after 7 this morning, and it'll be the D.C. Swamp Update for Thursday instead. Wild Sam and Steve is here. Steve, how are you doing this morning? What's on your mind?
I'm doing pretty good, but I think it's Thursday, and somebody messes up the line when I start talking. I wonder if it's a conspiracy.
Well, no. Did someone mess the line, or are you having a problem?
Well, yesterday, yeah. I started to talk to you, and the line...
Oh, you know, what happened, and I just wanted to explain that. You know, we have voice over internet protocol for phone calls. They're VoIP, right?
Yeah.
And... every now and then, every few days, it's kind of like you have to reboot the system. I don't know if it's just because the computers that run it all have to, you know, because there are practically no copper lines any longer, and the VoIP,
the VoIP that we're dealing with,
so that's what was going on, and for some reason, line 3 and 4 were both just like underwater. It was just horrible. So.
I thought it was the government didn't want me to talk. So,
that goes without saying the government doesn't want you to talk, but that was not a conspiracy yesterday. That was just an equipment error, okay?
There we go. Back in 19, well, around 2000, I got a job with Solomon Smith Barney, the financial investment firm.
That's right.
I went to some Chamber of Commerce meetings at the time, and PP&L came in and told us that there was a lot of turmoil in the electricity business because Kulongowski's girlfriend had an office in the Capitol, and she was selling these.
You're talking about deals. You know, you're not talking about Kulongowski. You're talking about the other Ted.
Maybe you're right.
Okay, I just forgot his name off the top because he's been so good.
Yeah.
Resigned in disgrace, in essence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what they said was PP&L said that they were having a lot of turmoil because they'd sold all these rights to build windmills, and they were going to make a lot of money. They sold it to investors, and they were going to make a lot of money off the windmills. Well, they built a lot of them in the gorge, in the Columbia River Gorge.
Yeah.
And so they got them all online, and they were kind of working. And then there was a big windstorm, and there was 1,000 megawatts of electricity that was generated by these windmills, but there was no room on the grid for the electricity. You know, they were supposed mm-hmm. to be like peaker plants. And so – Kulongowski,
by the way, it was Governor Kitzhaber. I was trying to search my brain. It's like I've completely forgotten about John Kitzhaber, but yeah, that's who it was. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, they had sold these rights for these windmills, and they didn't get to sell their electricity because the grid didn't need it. Well, the state legislature went in. You know, they were one of the first governments that was in on this green scam thing. So they made it so PP&L had to take the wind energy over hydro. And at the time, wind energy was something 14, 15 cents a megawatt or a kilowatt. And
yeah, which was about seven times. That was about seven times what the hydro cost, right?
Yes. Well, anyway, the grid managers were just having a terrible time because the wind was up and down, and mm-hmm. they're trying to turn off other things and spill water over the dams and do everything else to try to follow the law that Kitzhaber had passed. And so that's one of the things that happened. And another thing is I after a while, I went to work for a bank, and I was covering several banks over on the coast. And it's amazing. Around Brookings, 100-mile-an-hour wind is not unusual at all.
So I would be curious as to, you know, can these offshore wind power plants, can they feather their blade somehow?
That's a good question.
Because those kind of hurricane or those big stormy winds that you can get off the coast of Oregon are well known to tear up conventional propellers. Maybe they're special designs. I don't want to throw the whole thing under the bus there. But I just think that there are much better ways to work this kind of issue.
Well,
and
there was a house down on Low Tide Drive that was built that mm-hmm. had all the siding blown off of it. It blew not all the siding, but on one side, and it blew it had a heat pump. It blew the heat pump off its pad.
Wow.
the wind is ferocious over there. So I just question whether it's legal or not. It seems to me like it's another deal where, you know, some political person is going to make a bunch of money off of it. And having that electricity go through salt water, the resistance is going to be terrible. You know, the fact that the magnetic field from the electricity going through the cables is going to be affected by the salt water.
It must be okay, though. They've been doing this. This is not the only place that's ever tried wind power, but I know that they're having a great difficulty making money at it in other places, like over in Scotland and Ireland, places like that.
Yeah. You know? That's where they make the scam. You know, it doesn't make money, but people get paid to do it.
Yeah. And by the way, the person who was taking part in the scams that ended up leading to the Oregon Governor Kitzhaber resigning, that was Sylvia Hayes. That was the girlfriend selling access. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They were selling access, and the thing they were selling was the rights to these windmills.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, Corrupticos after Corrupticos. I appreciate the call there, Steve. Thanks for the take on that. All right. So now that we know that this wind power auction is in jeopardy, this is the latest reporting coming on that. There was another story kind of going in that. Oh, here's another. Speaking of corruption, the reporting which is now coming out, though, is that the non-citizen votes, the 1,269 that they have discovered so far on the voting rolls, could not have swayed Oregon contests, officials telling lawmakers. No contest in which their participation could have had an impact. And, yeah, they could be telling the truth on something like that. But my issue that I have with this entire story is that this is the limited hangout sort of situation. Yeah, it happened. Yeah, we did bad. We're going to do something. We're going to do our best to fix it. But there was nothing in this that could have actually caused any problems. Would they volunteer, though, that they're going to take all of the 2 million or so people who are on the Oregon voting rolls and run them through E-Verify or run them through the database that can, you know, ensure that all these people are actual American citizens? No, they're not talking about doing that. This is just about what has been discovered so far. So I think that a little bit of this, nothing to see here. Move along, little sheeple, and don't be an election denier. Have faith in our democracy, meaning that the Democratic control of the cheat machine. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it, all right? 7 o'clock, we're going to check in here at Town Hall News, catch up on some of the goodies going on there, and then Rick Manning with the D.C. Swamp Update for Conspiracy Theory Thursday. A little different day, but we'll have a good time. Talk more about the MSNBC interview with Kamala Harris. And I really do seriously want to talk to Rick about President Trump's focus on tariffs. And I'm a little bit concerned, and not that it would make me vote for Kamala Harris, no way. But when I hear him kind of going to war, you know, going after John Deere, threatening tariffs on John Deere's stock goes down, and all these, I just don't know if you want to try to get friends. You want to try to make friends, not beat people up. But maybe I'm wrong about it. We'll talk with Rick about it and more. Maybe he can change his tone. We'll see. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Changing weather norms means changes to water quality.